My grandfather loved to watch wrestling on TV. But I was a child, and what I did not understand back then was that it was all for show. I took it literally, thinking all of that violence was horribly real, so I couldn't understand why my grandfather laughed so heartily throughout all of the matches. I didn't see anything funny at all, but he knew that it was an elaborate choreographed show, which certainly the Wrestling Channel has learned for everybody that's come after that. But not all wrestling matches are just for show, of course. Wrestling is an Olympic sport because it takes real training, strength, and strategy. And wrestlers, from brothers to brawlers, have engaged each other on playgrounds and street corners across cultures and throughout the centuries. Wrestling is intensely personal. It's intimate. No weapons. No aiming from a distance. Just hands, holds, and strength. One against one. That's what makes it such a good metaphor for struggle. We wrestle with others, with ideas, with ourselves. We wrestle for resolution because we want to prevail, but even more, because we want things to be settled. I swear, when Rick and Kathy and I picked this Lenten theme, wrestling with change, we did not know that I would be getting a job offer that would take me away from here, away from you. Nor did we realize that it would start on the same Sunday as daylight savings time. But here we are. It's the first Sunday in Lent, and we are wrestling with change. And what better partner to help us than Jacob, the most famous wrestler in the whole Bible? Jacob didn't wrestle with just anyone. The story's ambiguous. So he wrestled with a man, he wrestled with an angel, he wrestled with God, but he did it on the eve of a transformation, a major one in his life, the kind that makes the case that God is present in our struggles with change, and God's offer to us in the midst of change is transformation and blessing. But let's back up and recall some of Jacob's story. Earlier, he tricked his brother Esau out of Esau's birthright, and then he deceived their father into giving him, Jacob, their father's blessing when it belonged to Esau. He fled from Esau's wrath to another land where he worked for 7 years for Laban in return for Laban's daughter Rachel. But then Jacob the trickster is tricked in turn by Laban, who marries him to his daughter Leah and demands another 7 years of labor for Rachel. Now, not surprisingly, things go sour between these two, Jacob and Laban. And Jacob figures it's time to stop running and to face Esau. So he gathers his wives and his children and his livestock, and he heads back home, sending messengers ahead to announce his coming to Esau. He sends gifts, lots of them, hoping to appease him. In short, he expects the worst. He thinks that Esau will want to kill him. Today's reading takes place the night before the big meeting. After 20 years of estrangement, Jacob is about to confront his brother. Fearing Esau's reaction, Jacob sends his entourage away and waits alone for the night to pass. As the text says, Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. When this personage saw that he had not prevailed against Jacob, he wrenched Jacob's hip socket. Subsequently, this being declares, Jacob will no longer be your name, but rather Israel, for you have striven with beings divine and human and have prevailed. Incidentally, that name, Israel, meaning God, Israel can be translated as one who wrestles with God, but also one who is straight in the sense of direct or honest with God. So with whom does Jacob wrestle? In a story with many layers of meaning, interpretations abound. Jewish commentaries say that he wrestled with the angel of Esau. Jungian analysts say he wrestled with himself, with the shadow or the repressed or negative side of his character. The shadow must be made manifest and acknowledged in order to be conquered and integrated into the personality. So in this scenario, Jacob faces his own treachery, deceit, and dishonesty, and in so doing, he conquers this split-off side of himself to become whole. Other theologians say he wrestled with God. Otherwise, why would the mysterious wrestler give him a new name that literally claims the presence of God, Israel? Jacob himself seems to believe this when he concludes that he has seen God face to face and lived. Whoever it is, Jacob's struggle provides one of the richest metaphors in the Bible. It comes with multiple layers of meaning, but all of them echo one thing, and that is transformation. As a psychologist, Michael Abramsky writes, the act of wrestling is an undoing and a transformation of Jacob's past relationship to Esau. At one level of meaning, the angel, in this case from the Jewish commentary, represents Esau. Jacob defeats Esau, and in the past they were accomplished through chicanery. Now he faces the Esau angel straight on and becomes Esau's partner or equal legitimately. However this being is interpreted as angel, man, God, or Jacob himself, one conclusion is clear. One does not emerge from this kind of wrestling without some kind of reminder. In this case, it's in the form of a limp. These reminders are not necessarily disfiguring, however, and here's where we can insert ourselves into the story. Here's where we think about our own struggles in the night. Recovery from a major loss or life trauma is not about moving on in the sense of forgetting. Recovery means that you have taken that event and given it meaning and context. It means that you would never wish it on anyone else or want to go through it again yourself, but you value who you have become as a person for having come through it. Recovery is never about forgetting or putting it behind you as though it didn't happen. Recovery is always about meaning and value and integration. It is about becoming strong in the broken places It is not about pretending the break never happened. Recovery is about prevailing, hanging on until a blessing is wrenched from the experience. Jacob would not let go until God blessed him. We do not let go until we have demanded meaning from God. Recovery is also about daybreak. The morning after, when we move forward, with a limp, if necessary, to face the new day. The night is not eternal. Dawn comes, and Jacob goes out to meet Esau. Day breaks, and we go out to face our fears, knowing this, and this is the crucial thing, that we have been touched by God. This kind of recovery is the kind of transformation Jacob underwent that long and mysterious night. It is the kind of transformation experienced by the early church when they realized after his death that everything Jesus taught was still possible. And when they lived according to those teachings, it was as though he were present with them still. On the one hand, you could say that the season of Lent is a preparation for loss. But what it really is a preparation for change. They run together. Because so often, the experience of change comes to us initially as loss. But that gets us only as far as Good Friday. Lent, as we know, does not stop there. It culminates in Easter, which is a rather spectacular way to say that from our endings come new and unimaginable beginnings. Lent signifies a liminal space-time, an in-between time of incubation and unknowing, where the outcome is far from certain. It is when we struggle, wrestle with who we are and who we may become. In the church calendar, it comes in the spring. In our lives, it can come at any time. When it hits, and we're wrestling with hard times, we can be excused for wishing that it were all for show, that the struggle has been choreographed and we can fast forward through it like a bout on the wrestling channel. But Lent teaches us that wrestling matches are real. They are real. And they are personal. Lent can teach us, if we let it, to prepare for those seasons of loss, endings, wrestling, when we stand our ground with God and demand that our experiences have some meaning. It can teach us, too, that whatever our struggles are, God is mysteriously present in them, not as our adversary, but as the one giving us strength and promising transformation. Finally, Lent can teach us that dawn will come and we will go forward, not as we were, but as we have become. We will know ourselves as people who stand in the presence of God and live.
Let us all bow our heads for prayer. Loving God, we gather here today as we do every Sunday, submitting ourselves not only for self-reflection, but submitting ourselves to you in our awareness that you are always involved in our lives. And you know what each one of us has to deal with in our own lives, all the struggles, all the hopes, all the fears. And loving God, we appreciate the fact that no matter what happens to us, you will always be there with us, pushing, pulling, wrestling, loving. Because it's only your power that makes it all work, your creative, transforming power. And so may we have courage. May we have insight not only into our own selves, but also into you. Loving God, we thank you for all those who have gone before us, who have lived their lives out of courage and joy. And we come to Jesus. We look to him to be the guide for the way that we live. And we pray that same prayer that he taught his own disciples how to pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever.